From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This country has been in the middle of a long, hard conversation about the kind of law and order our police deliver to the public, especially in minority communities. We're not done yet. There's passion and real grievance in minority communities, but also in police departments around the country. Into that mix, FBI Chief James Comey has lobbed a big grenade, warning about a Ferguson effect of cops afraid or unwilling to do their jobs, under scrutiny, and maybe even a national crime wave. Okay, this we've got to talk about, and we will. This hour on Point, race, policing, and the FBI Chief's warning of a Ferguson effect. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Do you see cops pulling back? Can we not have good, even-handed policing and good law enforcement? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. First, for many in the public, word of this came on Friday, speech at the University of Chicago. James Comey, FBI director, said he has heard again and again from police officers speaking to him privately that the new world of ever-present cameras and viral YouTube videos is intimidating, too intimidating for some of them to do their jobs.
In today's YouTube world, are officers reluctant to get out of their cars and do the work that controls violent crime? Are officers answering 911 calls, but avoiding the informal contact that keeps bad guys from standing around, especially with guns?
Just asking was the interrogative form of that on Friday. But there's this as well, talking about how the sort of extra scrutiny that's come after Ferguson and everything else we've seen in Baltimore, Eric Garner, New York, and beyond. Police get out of their cars. Here's Comey again.
I spoke to officers privately in one big city precinct who described being surrounded by young people with mobile phones held high, taunting them when they get out of their cars. They said to me, "We feel under siege, and we don't feel much like getting out of our cars."
Okay, but he went further. A chill wind. And again, he's not saying exactly, he's saying maybe. He's just putting this kind of as a question. But has the change in climate since Ferguson changed what police are willing to do, how they look at their role, their job?
The suggestion, the question that's been asked of me is, are these kinds of things changing police behavior all over the country? The honest answer is, I don't know. But I do have a strong sense that some part of the explanation is a chill wind that has blown through law enforcement over the last year.
I don't know, says the FBI director, but he sure has raised it in a big way on Friday, again on Monday in Chicago. The White House on Monday, Press Secretary Josh Earnest said there's no evidence to back up the FBI's suggestion of a Ferguson effect linked to a crime spike across the country.
The available evidence at this point does not support the notion that law enforcement officers around the country are shying away from fulfilling their responsibilities.
And yesterday in Chicago, the president weighing in as well, trying to kind of split the difference. We've got a lot to look at here. Joining me first from Washington, Devlin Barrett. He covers the Department of Justice and law enforcement for the Wall Street Journal. Covered the NYPD for more than a decade. Devlin, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being here.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Okay. What is shaping up here? The FBI director may have been talking about this for a while quietly, but he's been talking about it loudly in the last few days. The White House coming out kind of loudly at first and saying that's not what's happening here. What are we seeing unfold, Devlin?
I think you're seeing a national debate about policing that really hasn't existed until, you know, the events of the last year forced the issue. And I think Comey is right to talk about the phenomenon of videos of police officers. I think that is changing the debate. That is changing the perception. I think what's interesting about what Comey said is it you know, angered a lot of people who are in the police reform movement, the Black Lives Matter movement, because they feel that they are trying to, you know, cast blame on protesters for actual crimes being committed in the streets. But I actually think there's a bigger conversation to be had, not just about police conduct, but also about police morale, because whether or not he is right that this is responsible for crime, I don't think there's any question that there is a major issue with police morale right now in this country, and that could be having an effect on what's happening in the streets.
The president in Chicago yesterday walking a kind of tightrope here, doesn't want to look away from misconduct that has been there, doesn't want to undermine the police, saying in Chicago to the International Association of Chiefs of Police, let's not go to us and them. Here's Barack Obama.
I reject any narrative that seeks to divide police and communities that they serve. I reject a storyline that says, when it comes to public safety, there's an us and a them. A narrative that too often gets served up to us by news stations seeking ratings or tweets seeking retweets or political candidates seeking some attention.
Barack Obama, cool yesterday in Chicago, but there are much hotter voices out there. Here's Chris Christie, CBS, on Face the Nation. Exchange between him and host John Dickerson after Christie was asked about law enforcement in America.
There's lawlessness in this country. The president encourages this lawlessness. He encourages it.
Encourages it how?
Well, by his own rhetoric. He does not support the police. He doesn't back up the police. He justifies Black Lives Matter. I mean,
but Black Lives Matter shouldn't be justified at all.
Listen, I don't believe that that movement should be justified when they're calling for the murder of police officers. No,
but they're not calling for the murder of police officers.
Sure, they are.
Really? And the president encouraging lawlessness? You see, this debate gets hot in a hurry. Devlin Barrett, what about the numbers? Is there a crime spike? And if so, where is it? National? What is Comey pointing toward?
Well, he's pointing toward what you see in major cities, where in many major cities, the majority of, you know, the top 50 cities in the U.S., you definitely see spikes in violent crime. Now, some places the spike is really incredible. Baltimore is an amazing case study in how quickly crime can rise. And, you know, there you're seeing something on the order of a 70% increase in shootings just in the last year. Baltimore, which has, you know, less than 10% of the population of New York City, now has more murders than New York City. Baltimore now has a murder a day. And that is a level not seen for decades, frankly. That type of violence is something that, frankly, is a throwback to the 80s and 90s. So something is happening, you know.
But since when? And by and large, I mean, are we talking all cities, some cities? Is it really? Baltimore may be back at that level, but I'm reading here that most cities are still far, far below 80s and 90s levels in violent crime.
Yes, that's absolutely right. But you're also seeing cities, I think Cleveland is one, I think Houston and Dallas are the others, mm-hmm. where you're seeing something like on the order of, you know, 20, 30, 40% increases in homicides so far this year compared to the same time last year. There is definitely something happening in many major U.S. cities. One of the problems, though, frankly, in this entire discussion is that our national crime data is so bad that we won't know for another year, really, whether we can actually say, yes, there is a definitive rise in violent crime in the United States.
And Director Comey himself alluding to that and saying, look, I don't have the numbers. Nevertheless, he's been willing on this very hot topic to go out there without them and kind of speak from the gut. I want to ask you where he may be getting that view of the world. If I may, Devlin, stand by in Washington. I want to bring in as well, though, from Seattle, Sue Rahr, Executive Director, Washington State Criminal Justice Training Commission. She was also a member of the President Obama's so-called Task Force on 21st Century Policing, which came out with a big bunch of findings in May on how policing needs to be done now. Sue Rahr, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
So you're hearing these claims from people. Rahm Emanuel, mayor of Chicago, saying in a closed meeting, but there was a Washington Post in there, police are in a fetal position now when it comes to enforcing the law. St. Louis police chief blaming a Ferguson effect for a drop in self-initiated policing. Do you buy it? Do you see it, Sue?
I think those are pretty broad brush statements. I don't see that behavior in my circle of law enforcement professionals in Washington and contacts I have around the country. I think there is a definite impact on police morale, but I would be far more cautious about attributing that to a change in police behavior.
Did the work of your commission look at the reaction to Ferguson and the other incidents that have been so publicly discussed and think about how that would affect police operations, police morale?
Well, we talked a lot about the impact of body cameras and just general digital images that are widely available. And there's no doubt that there is an impact when officers know they're being videotaped. We didn't talk as much about morale as the more practical impacts of body cameras and transparency and accountability.
But you don't buy that in this period where the video cameras come out in a hurry
And police can get in trouble in a hurry. That deputy in South Carolina who flipped the girl out of her chair, that's a whole issue in itself. He's now fired today. You don't buy that police may be more reluctant just to even get out of their cars and act?
I'm sure that there are probably some police officers that are more reluctant, but I was a cop for 33 years before I came to the training commission. And in my experience, you have different events nationally that cause a backlash like this. And you will certainly hear officers complain. You will hear officers express reluctance. But when you get out on the street and you watch the human beings that are cops, the vast majority of them are still going to do their job. They may not be really happy. They may be reluctant. But I would be very, very cautious to say that they are depolicing because of it.
But that seems to be what the FBI director is suggesting here. Are you surprised to hear him so prominent raising this, Sue?
I was surprised to hear his comments because of his national position. And again, I think it's very dangerous to make broad brush statements. And obviously, it was couched as a question. I understand that, but it certainly raises the issue. I have a lot more faith in our police officers in this country. Again, I think they are. I think the morale has taken a hit. I think that they are more cautious. But the cops I know and the cops that I've worked with my entire life, they are not going to stop protecting the community because they're being criticized.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about race, police, and the hot debate now over the so-called Ferguson effect. The FBI chief says some crime may be up because some cops are cowed or backing off. Activists say we've got to be able to film and complain. You can join us this hour. What do you see? Policemen and women, what are you seeing out there? What are you feeling? Do you feel reluctant to do your job? Scared? Can police be serious here, that they have to be given free rein to do anything, to do the basics? Is that what we're hearing, or is that too simple? Can we not have good, even-handed policing and good law enforcement? With Devlin Barrett, covers the Department of Justice for the Wall Street Journal. Sue Rahr, Executive Director of Washington State Criminal Justice Training Commission. She was on President Obama's task force on 21st century policing. Again, the White House Monday responding to James Comey raising these questions about a Ferguson effect. Here's White House Press Secretary Josh Ernst.
The evidence that we've seen so far doesn't support the contention that law enforcement officials are somehow shirking their responsibility. And in fact, you hear law enforcement leaders across the country indicating that that's not what's taking place.
Okay, but listen around here, CNN. This is after the death of Freddie Gray. Here's two anonymous Baltimore police officers talking with CNN about that event's effect on their policing. Here's just a clip from their interview. Their voices were modulated to keep their anonymity.
Proactive, self-initiated policing has stopped.
We're now in a reactive mode.
We're in a total reactive mode.
And this is the result that you get. And ultimately, it does a disservice to the law-abiding citizens. It does a disservice to the business owners. It does a disservice to everybody except the criminal element.
There are police in Baltimore voices change saying, hey, we're afraid to act, and it's a disservice. The president yesterday saying we've got to stay out of a big trap for this country here. I'll let him describe it.
We've got to resist the false trap that says either there should be no accountability for police or that every police officer is suspect no matter what they do.
Amen. False trap. Sue Rahr, Devlin Barrett, please stand by. Lieutenant Bob Kroll joins us right now from St. Paul, Minnesota, president of the Police Officers Federation of Minneapolis. Been in the police department there since 1989. Patrol officer, undercover, commander of a domestic assault unit, on the SWAT team, seen it all. Lieutenant Kroll, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Do you, in your community, see a Ferguson effect? Police officers backing off their jobs because they're afraid of the extra scrutiny that's now being applied.
Yes, I do. I completely concur with Director Comey and the two Baltimore officers whose voices were disguised. There's no measuring what officers do or don't do when they're supposed to be working proactively. Of course, they're going to take their calls, but the proactive police activity has really dropped off. In my 27 years, morale is at an all-time low. And officers don't go into this job to work that way. They go in to be aggressive, work hard, proactive patrol. And be clear, they're not afraid of the criminals. They're afraid of fallout and maintaining their job. And in my 20 years on the Federation board, I've never had to represent someone who didn't respond and didn't take action and, lack of a better term, was a coward. They don't get in trouble. But it's your heat seekers, your hard-charging cops that are always in internal affairs. And at some point, the complaints stack up on them, and they've got to shut down their proactivity to maintain their job. It's sad.
But explain that to us, because people aren't saying don't be policemen and women, don't do your job. They're saying don't do it in a way that's racially biased, that's needlessly violent, that is, you know, whacking people when they don't need to be whacked. I mean, people aren't saying stop being a police person.
I don't think any officers like to use force, but what people need to remember is you've got a duty to comply with what the officers tell you. We tell everybody, treat everybody like you have your parents treated, meaning ask them nicely to do something. If you don't gain compliance by asking nice, you tell them, you give them a direct order. But then the third result, the ultimate result, is they are going to do what you need them to do. And force has to be used in our career because not everybody complies with what they're told to do. I don't think you can point to a force incident where it wasn't precipitated by the subject's actions that they're dealing with. If people comply, force won't be used.
Surar, you know police very well, and you say you don't see this, you don't hear this. Comey says maybe we do, and Lieutenant Kroll says we certainly do. How do you account for this disparity in perspective, Sue?
Well, I think it depends on who you are regularly talking to on a daily basis. And I want to clarify, I do hear cops complaining about the scrutiny. What I said is I don't see cops depolicing or being reluctant to do their job. I think that is a hallmark of police culture. We tend to be pretty vocal about our complaints. But at the end of the day, that doesn't stop the majority of cops from doing their job. Now, let me also be clear, there is 18,000 different police departments in this country, 18,000 different communities that are policed, and the culture and the expectations in each community and each police department are pretty different. So we have to be very careful about making broad brush statements about all police.
And yet there are a lot of big statements being made lately, and right at the top of the FBI. Devlin, Sue, Bob Kroll, please stand by. A lot of callers here. Bonita in New Haven, Connecticut. Bonita, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was calling because I was really disturbed by the video of the young lady in school who was flipped over by the resource officer and dragged across the floor.
In Columbia, South Carolina, uniformed deputy there. He's now fired. What do you think of the whole thing, Bonita?
I think that he should be fired. I believe that what he did was unnecessary and over the top. She had a cell phone. She didn't want to give up her cell phone. She didn't listen. That is not the way that you treat a child in school who didn't listen.
Bonita, may I ask you, does this story in a high school in South Carolina relate to the bigger picture of Black Lives Matter and people getting their video cameras out to record what cops are doing when they... How so, Bonita?
Because I'm African-American, okay. And I believe that African-Americans are in fear when they interact with police officers because they're not sure what the outcome will be. I mean, a minor thing, a traffic stop, walking across the street against the red light, being in class and not giving up your cell phone. Those are things that if you are a minority may end with you injured or even dead.
Yep.
And in this instance, we're looking at a child who, when she was dragged across the floor, was arrested. And when I was in school, if you didn't listen to the teacher, you went to the principal's office. You did not go to jail. We're looking at from school to prison pipeline. You were putting children in jail. And then the young lady who recorded it and was trying to intercede on her behalf was also arrested.
Yeah, toppled, flipped on her head, cuffed, arrested. I mean, she was being disobedient, but this is school. This is not prison. Bonita, I appreciate your call. Lieutenant Kroll, do you see an attitudinal problem there that flows into more general policing?
Well, we just heard from basically the root of the problem. You just heard from a person that has no training or experience in what we do, and that's what the police are sick of. They're sick of being Monday morning quarterbacked, and everybody seems to know our job better than we do, lacking all the training and experience. It's getting to the point, the only ones that are worse are our NFL head coaches on Monday morning.
Yeah, but hang on, we've been watching a lot. I mean, we are citizens, and this is our country, and, you know, we respect the police, but the police work for us. We saw a lot
Correct.
In Ferguson, assault rifles on top of trucks pointed out at crowds. I mean, Americans
well,
have
let's
seen
start
things
with that,
that
girl
don't
in the school.
Look excusable.
Let's start with the girl in the school.
Okay.
First, the police are obviously in that school because they have behavior issues, or they wouldn't be in the school to begin with. So I'm sure they didn't request to be there. The officer got assigned there. I'm sure it escalated by her noncompliance with a teacher to begin with. And again, it's against the rules to have the phone.
Flip
you
a kid on their head,
to turn it over.
Cuff and arrest?
Well, at what point do they gain compliance? Do we just walk away and let kids behave the way they want to behave? I think it's a problem that starts at home.
Devlin,
poor parenting probably led to that.
Yeah, Devlin, Sue, I'll come to you, but I've only got Devlin for another minute here, so forgive me, Sue. Devlin, I hear you there.
So two things. One, I think the lieutenant is right when he says if you just see the takedown, you don't understand our jobs. And that's an argument that I think cops have made and have a point on for a long time.
Yep.
That solely the use of force viewed in a vacuum is a hard measure and in some ways an unfair measure because you don't know what led up to it. I have to say though, in the school incident, and we've done, you know, some reporting on mm-hmm. police in schools, this was a discipline problem. It is really hard to justify what is the crime exactly that she was being arrested for besides not listening to her teacher. Not listening to your teacher is not a crime. It just isn't. So the problem, I think, is once you start putting cops into the school environment, they're going to behave like cops because that is their job and that is what they're trained to do. And I think what you're starting to see, I think we're actually too far down the road.
Yeah.
You're seeing people apply police solutions to school discipline problems. And that it was never supposed to be that. And the federal government has weighed in and said, you shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
I think the head of that department said, we don't want to be the disciplinarians of the school. But that is, in fact, what some of the schools are asking those cops to be. And I think what you saw in South Carolina is one of the worst case results of that.
Devlin, I've only got you for another minute. And the school story is so hot, but I don't want to lose the big picture of policing out in the streets as well. And maybe there's a link here. I want to ask you about this bit from Comey's speech, because you cover this in Washington all the time. Maybe you've talked more with Director Comey. But at this big police conference, chief's conference, he said civilians and police are growing apart in a polarized society. He put a lot of blame on a citizenry armed with a new arsenal of phone cameras and social media and this critical eye on cops on duty, suggesting that this gap that he sees, maybe I guess opening, you'll interpret this for us, may be tempting a big new crime wave, something really ominous. Here's Comey.
I actually feel the lines continuing to arc away and maybe accelerating. Incident by incident, video by video, hashtag by hashtag. And that's a terrible place for us to be. And just as those lines are arcing away from each other, we have a crisis of violent crime in some of our major cities in this country.
Devlin Barrett, the FBI chief, sounding almost apocalyptic there, like there's some canyon opening up. We're all going to fall into it. What is he talking about?
I think what's going to happen as a result of, for lack of a better term, the YouTube era is that you will see there will actually be less police misconduct because of videos, because the cops who are most likely to engage in misconduct will actually be forced by eyes and videos to check themselves. But I also think the public opinion of police, their standing in the public eye, will drop and is dropping before our eyes, frankly, because of videos like the South Carolina video. So the conduct as a whole may actually improve, but I think the view of police will actually go down. And I think a lot of what Comey is saying, a lot of what the police officers are saying, is a response to the falling esteem of the public toward police officers. And I think everyone's trying to struggle with what that means for, you know, police, what that means for city governments, and what that means, frankly, for cops on the street.
But is he saying that in this country, we can't have a civil order without all that kind of extra punching and kicking and kind of badassery that shows up in the videos?
I think he is in some ways channeling all the things he's hearing from police officers, and that is what police officers are saying. What you see a lot is a lot of officers who are frustrated are saying, "Fine, you know what? If I'm just going to get in trouble for a rough takedown or what others view, the public views as misconduct, I'm just not going to do it." And I do think there is that general complaint, and to me that's in some ways more of a morale issue than anything else. But that is a real phenomenon out there, and that is a real discussion that's being had. I think navigating the two sides of this, as Comey is trying to do, is incredibly difficult, and you see that in the White House pushing back against what he said. You know, there is a gap right now between the Obama administration's official, you know, view of this stuff and where a lot of people in both the FBI and the Justice Department are on this.
Devlin Barrett with The Wall Street Journal, we really appreciate your being with us today. I know we have to let you go. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Sue Rohr, can we not have it all? Is there something about the rough stuff at the edges, and maybe not the edges in some community, that is a suggestion here that by some police, even by Comey, that if you start videoing that and rub that out, the cops won't have the edge they need to do their jobs? Really?
I don't think that's the case. And I think part of the problem, and somebody mentioned this before, is we look at a moment in time captured by video and we're missing the bigger picture. When you go back to that school setting and the school resource officer being brought in to handle the problem with the girl, the question that comes to my mind is, what is wrong in that school that the teacher is unable to manage the behavior of that student? Why is that student being so resistive? In my experience with school resource officers, they are not brought into the school to be the security force and because there's danger. They're brought into the school to build rapport with students. It's a great recruiting tool. And if you have a school culture and a school administration that can't handle their student body, and that's why they're bringing the police in, I think that's a completely different problem to talk to. When you look out on the street, we have a lot of social institutions that have completely failed. The mental health system, drug treatment, schools, the economy, all of these failures end up in conflict on the street, and the cops are brought in to clean it up. So I think the cops are put in a nearly impossible position. But that doesn't mean that we should disregard civil rights in the process. There has to be a balance. And when we see these videos, we can't react just to that moment in time. Certainly that's going to get our attention. But those things captured on video should start the conversation about, why is a student not following the directions of the teacher? What is going on in that school that leads the student to believe they can behave that way?
But as you say, the threat of continuity is that we can raise similar questions about the whole society. And Comey seems to be suggesting, mess around too much here and you're going to open up a big problem. Do you resonate with that, Lieutenant Kroll?
I do. Two things I want to touch on. One, the school. Where is the officer's due process? I mean, when did the incident happen and he's fired already? So the same people that want due process for criminals, it applies for everybody except the cops. This guy did this. He physically removed this girl. He's fired. Where is his due process? And then another thing is a hot topic is police body cameras. And we're introducing them in Minneapolis, and I firmly support it, because what you're going to have at the end of the day of that officer's video is 99%+ of them getting treated like garbage and being very tolerant in the process. And you're not going to find your police misconduct. You're not going to find it. If they do, it's on camera and it's done. But I think what happens is public groups don't want that data released. I said, let's view it in the widest form, and you're going to turn the general population, the silent majority, so pro-police after they see what they encounter every day.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about race, police, and the hot debate now over the so-called Ferguson effect. The FBI chief says some crime is up because, he says or asks, is it because some cops are cowed, backing off? Activists say we've got to be able to have the video cameras out. We've got to be able to call misconduct out when it is witnessed. You can join us. What do you hear in this debate? Can you picture police so unsettled by video cameras and Black Lives Matter that they won't get out of their cars to stop crime? Can we not have good, even-handed policing and good law enforcement with Sue Rahr. She was on the President's Task Force on 21st Century Policing, came out with a big report in May on where we need to go here. Lieutenant Bob Kroll is with us, President of the Police Officers Federation of Minneapolis. He says he sees the chill that Comey is talking about. Very much in the news lately, kind of a line all the way from a high school in South Carolina right up to big national issues. Yesterday, a cell phone video out captured the moment that a South Carolina high school student encountered this high school resource officer, a deputy, who's now been fired. He drags the student from her desk. The whole thing went viral, national, in a big way. Here's a bit of it.
You don't know me? Okay, you're going to come with me or you're going to make it? Come on. I'm going to get you up. Give me hands.
Student says, I don't know you. You hear what follows. Lieutenant Kroll says that's only a piece of it, and it is only a piece of it. We fully acknowledge that, but it's got the whole country's attention. The president yesterday in Chicago was at pains to describe the problems of policing in minority communities and the challenges of policing in America in an even-handed way. But he called on police chiefs in the convention hall to acknowledge the country has a historic problem.
For generations, we've had African-American and Latino communities who've pointed to racial disparities in the application of criminal justice, from arrest rates to sentencing to incarceration rates. And all too often, those concerns, no matter how well documented, have been brushed aside. And we can't have a situation in which a big chunk of the population feels like maybe the system isn't working as well for them. At the same time, too often, law enforcement gets scapegoated for the broader failures of our society and our criminal justice system.
The president there trying to acknowledge history and walk a fine line. Bob Kroll, Sue Rahr, please stand by. Jarvis DeBerry joins us right now from New Orleans, editorial writer, columnist for NOLA.com, The Times-Picayune. Jarvis, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you with us.
Thanks, Tom.
You've been looking at what he's been saying, Comey, talking about a chill wind blowing through law enforcement, officers reluctant to get out of their cars, he said, and do the work that controls violent crime. Put a question mark at the end of that, but there it is. How do you respond, Jarvis?
My biggest question is, how come the bad cops keep getting caught on camera if the good cops are so afraid to do anything? I mean, I think Monday's incident in South Carolina directly contradicts what Comey has said. We've seen so many incidents in the last year or so of bad cops getting caught on camera, and I'm unaware, and I'm having trouble understanding why we keep seeing that if at the same time the good cops are holding back.
Lieutenant Kroll says, watch the whole video and you might see something different. It gets excerpted, you know.
I have to confess to being quite appalled at some of the things that the lieutenant has been saying there. And perhaps that's because we've seen incidents in New Orleans where people were accosted by the police and shot, and they weren't resisting. We had Ronald Madison, who was killed on Danziger Bridge after Hurricane Katrina. We had James Brissett, who was killed. They weren't doing anything but walking across the bridge, and they were killed. We had Wendell Allen. The police went into his home thinking that he had marijuana. He appeared at the top of the staircase. He was naked from the waist up, was unarmed, and he was shot in the chest. We don't have video of those things, but we know that those things happened. So I would first have to say it is not true that everybody who gets harmed by the police was resisting in some way. We have some cops who are doing the wrong thing. Last year here in New Orleans, we had a police officer who turned off her body camera and then shot a suspect in the head. And she reported that she was responding to a sound of shots fired, but it was later reported that the only shot that was fired came from her gun. And so we want to know what our police officers are doing. I think we have the right to know what our police officers are doing. And I am personally suspicious of any police officer who says that you don't get the right to observe us and that you ought not take out your phone or your camera to observe us. We need to be observing what our police are doing.
Are you afraid, Jarvis,
what is democracy?
Yeah, are you afraid that in high crime areas of the city, police may say, hey, the heck, pull back? And maybe crime will spike and people just kind of
shame on them if they do. Now, to me, what you might be seeing is a reluctance of people to join police forces now. Now, here in New Orleans, we have a tremendous shortage of police officers. And from what I have researched and studied, that's true across the country. And I'm sure your guests could confirm that. But the that attrition started way before Ferguson. We've had police officers leaving the force for years, and it did not start in August 2014.
I want to bring our callers in again. Lucius in Franklin, Tennessee. Thank you very much for calling, Lucius. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom. And to your guests, I'm a black male, and one of the things I was taught at home is to respect the law. And I grew up into being a preacher, and one of the things I studied is that even scriptures tell us that these men who are in authority, it's not a terror to good works, but to evil. And when I see the bigger picture, of course you need checks and balance in every part of society. But at the same time, we got to respect the policemen and what they do every day. I live in the Franklin, Nashville area, and I talk to the police almost every day. And I'm saying respect the police, but at the same time, when they do wrong, yes, they should be disciplined. But we got to put the fear of God back in our society in a very mature and balanced way, because I work with young people, and I know how hard-headed they are. And looking at that video, that's a microcosm of a bigger picture. That young lady should have gave that up. She should have gave that cell phone up, but she didn't, and look what happens. And then the young man, the police, get fired on the spot because of pressure of happening around in America. I'm just saying respect authority, and when you respect authority and know how to treat people, our world becomes much, much better.
Lucius, what about the history that we just heard President Obama referring to? And I'm sure you know it well. There has been the rough application of justice, of law enforcement on minority communities, to say the least, over decades, even centuries. Is that not an issue, something we have to pay attention to here?
No doubt, but the president needs to be balanced in his attack. I've seen things from Rodney King on down to yesterday where the girl gets taken down. I've seen it all in my lifetime. I still say that we are treading this fine line and not to step on any toes. But at the end of the day, the common denominator is that authority has been given to the policeman, and he or she must do it in a way that is proper and balanced in bringing law and justice to America and to our society.
Yeah.
But once again, it starts at home.
Of course, I mean, there's a lot there. They got to do it in a way that's fair and balanced. I want to bring that to my panel. One more call, and I will. Anastasia in Cleveland, Ohio. Anastasia, you're on.
Hi. I'm a white American college-age girl, so I've never really not only given racism but dealt with racism. I don't really have a good idea of what that feels like. But it's pretty normal for somebody my age to go out in Cleveland on the weekends.
Okay, sure.
And last weekend, everybody gets done at the bar. Everybody calls Uber. The streets are packed. Cops get paid to sit there, make sure everything's fluid, everything goes well. It just so happened that our Uber driver happened to be an Arab in a big Chrysler 300. That
okay.
caught the cops' attention. We get in. Apparently not quick enough. Two cops came over to us, and I don't think they saw us girls on the back of the car right away. They just saw two darker-skinned people in the front seat in this car, and they started emotionally abusing the guy driving and then also my friend, screaming at them, yelling at them, telling them they're going to get them out of their car, put them on the hood, give them a ticket. That was when I rolled down the window, and the minute they saw me, they cooled down a bit. So
your white face.
The first time they saw me as a white girl, I don't know if that's what did it. I'm not quite sure. Maybe they felt guilty after knowing. I don't know. I'm not one to assume. All I know is that the cops are trying to instill this order out of fear, not out of caring for the communities, from what I can see. Well, some of them at least, not out of love. You know, they're trying to scare us. And all I know is that for most people, if you try to scare them, they're going to get angry and they're going to try to do it back. I think it's a cycle. I think especially the cops in Cleveland, they have a lot they deal with on a daily basis.
Anastasia, I got to cut it right there. You're smart, and I appreciate your witness to that over the weekend. You're sharing it with us. But then back to back, we've got these two different messages. Jarvis DeBerry, Anastasia says that they're trying to instill order out of fear. But you heard Lucius calling from Tennessee saying we need to put the fear of God into people.
Last year, we had an incident in New Orleans where a white man broke into a house in the city occupied by about five different people. He fired his weapon. He comes out of his out of that house, fires a weapon at a man driving a pickup truck with his young child in it. The windshield shatters. Cops arrive. He points his gun at one cop. They tell him to drop his weapon. He says, no, you lower your bleeping weapon. They don't fire. Neither does the other cop. He runs again, encounters
this
a
is the
third
white man talking
New Orleans
to cops.
Cop,
yep.
Who also... He threatens that cop with the gun, and that cop doesn't fire. Now, I'm not saying that the cop should have killed this person, mm-hmm. should have shot this person,
but if
I
were
could
black,
not conceive of a black man getting away with that.
Surar, how do we get this right? And there, the tension is so high that the director of the FBI is raising pretty unsettling questions about what's going on here. How do we get people comfortable and competent and doing their jobs without abuse, but doing their jobs?
Well, what we're trying to do in Washington, and I think this is spreading across the country, is we try to instill very deep values in our police recruits, a respect for the Constitution and a respect for the appropriate balance of how power is used. And I think if we start focusing on the culture of policing and get our cops' heads in the right place and we provide our cops with the support they need— you know, cops need to have community support. They need to have the support of their departments, but they also need to exercise appropriate authority. I think that's where we start. And when we look at each of these incidents, we have to be careful, look at the entire situation, mm-hmm. not just a moment in time, and jump to conclusions based on one piece of the incident.
But what about Lieutenant Kroll says, look, this is going to shut down your hard chargers. It, you know, who kind of go out there proactively and go after crime. Is there some winnowing out of the police force that this greater scrutiny is likely to produce? And if it does, will we still have an effective police force?
I don't agree with his statement. I think there is, it's going to cause a morale problem and there may be some slowing down. But I've been doing this job for 36 years now, and cops are driven to do the right thing. They're driven to fight crime and protect people. And I don't think good cops are going to stop doing their jobs. Now, there is going to be a small segment of cops that maybe have the wrong motivation that are going to be speaking out. But I think we need to focus on the vast majority of the cops are still going to do their job. I've been around long enough to see these different waves of cops feeling like they're under siege, but it passes. I meant when the Miranda decision came out, all the rhetoric
saying
was,
they had
my
to have
God.
The Miranda warning and police were upset about that.
Correct. The initial reaction was, my God, we're never going to be able to get anybody to confess. We're never going to be able to fight crime. But we adjust, and we have to always keep in mind, how much liberty are we willing to sacrifice for a reduction in crime? That's a conversation that has to be had in the community and in the police department. And that's going to vary from community to community.
Bob Kroll, Lieutenant Kroll, you hear Surar saying good police won't stop doing their jobs under scrutiny. Do you agree?
They're not going to stop. The question is how much proactive work are they going to do? And you look at, you know, you look at Darren Wilson, what did he do? Michael Brown was walking down the street after committing a robbery, and
he didn't know that. Officer Wilson didn't know that.
He didn't even know that. Mm-hmm. He took proactive action and told him to get out of the street, and the fight was on. He could have drove by and not said nothing, and he'd still have his job. That's what we don't know, is that factor of what interaction are they going to do when they're not required to. Of course, they're going to respond to the burglary in progress and the robbery in progress, things they're dispatched to. But if you look at Darren Wilson, if he wouldn't have stopped Michael Brown and told him to get out of the middle of the street, he'd still be employed.
But is that proactive work where abuse comes in, Bob?
Well, you want your officers in high crime areas being proactive, interacting with the community. That's how things get done. You know, you want them investigating suspicious people. And you mentioned Black Lives Matter a few times.
Yep.
Where are the Black Lives Matter movement when other blacks are killing blacks? You don't hear a peep. Within the last year, I went to a shooting where the victim was uncooperative. He wouldn't tell me who he was shot by. He says, it only matters when you shoot us. When we shoot each other, it's fine. That's a direct quote from a shooting victim to me.
Jarvis, what do you say here?
Tom, Lieutenant wants us to take a wider view of things. And if we are to do that, we should read the Department of Justice report about the Ferguson Police Department. And there is no way that you can come away from that report without being absolutely disgusted at the way the police were routinely stopping, harassing people for no apparent reason. Now, you want to take the wider view of things? That's a wider view. And so you have
the language they use, the attitudes, the way they were jumping in.
Exactly. I mean, they were stopping people for no reason. And they've been doing the same thing here in New Orleans. And I would imagine this the same in many other cities.
But what about proactive work, Lieutenant Kroll calls that? Proactive work that's going to deter crime.
There's a difference, I think, between proactive work and stopping people who have given you no reason to be suspicious. People who are suspicious by their mere appearance. And that is what people are fed up about. And yes, I will stand here and sit here and say that Black Lives Matter because I believe that far too often the police behave as if they don't.
Do you think Comey raising these questions is going to help us talk through this, or is this ammunition for those who don't want to change, don't want scrutiny?
It certainly doesn't sound like an invitation to conversation for me.
Well, he put it as a question. We've taken the question up. Others have, too. There's a lot embedded there. This one we're not finished with. We are very grateful to all three of you for being with us. Jarvis DeBerry at NOLA.com, The Times-Picayune, editorial writer and columnist there. Jarvis, it's always good to speak with you from New Orleans. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Lieutenant Bob Kroll, president of the Police Officers Federation of Minneapolis. Lieutenant Kroll, thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And Sue Rahr. She was a member of the Task Force on 21st Century Policing, put together by the White House Executive Director of Washington State Criminal Justice Training Commission. Sue, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.